We do need to reassure the nuclear weapon states of their security as they move towards zero nuclear weapons. Right? But what we're talking about here is not unilateral disarmament, not instant disarmament, but a gradual, balanced, phased, verified, monitored process.
Welcome to Understory, this 28th day of March 2018. I'm Elizabeth Poe. Today's program features Associate Professor Marianne Hansen. Dr. Hansen is an expert on nuclear arms control at the University of Queensland at a time when nuclear tensions are sharply rising and Australia seems to be stepping back from its commitment to nuclear non-proliferation. Member for Curtin, Foreign Minister Julie Bishop may not be taking interviews from Understory, but a Nielsen poll in 2014 showed that 84% of Australians surveyed would welcome a treaty to ban nuclear weapons. And now one has come into existence. Many might be wondering why Australia is hesitating to join nations around the world. Understory reporter Adrienne Glamorgan spoke to Marianne Hansen on Monday in Canberra.
I'm Marianne Hansen and I teach and research in the area of international politics, peace and conflict studies at the University of Queensland, focusing especially on weapons control and nuclear weapons especially.
Why is now an exciting time for people wanting to disarm nuclear weapons?
It's exciting because we've achieved a clear legal prohibition of nuclear weapons. We have to be careful not to think that that's going to result in disarmament quickly. It's not. But having that legal prohibition in place has been vitally important. 72 years after the first use of nuclear weapons, it's taken this long to get a treaty which condemns unequivocally this kind of weapon of mass destruction. We've been quite happy to condemn chemical weapons, biological weapons in the past, but for political reasons, nuclear weapons have always sort of escaped, and the great powers have not wanted any kind of legal prohibition of nuclear weapons.
That's despite their promise to eventually, correct, in good faith, get rid of them.
Yes, they have made this promise both in the Non-Proliferation Treaty of 1970 and subsequently at numerous conferences, etc. The problem is that while they're making this commitment, the reality is that they're no longer interested, if they ever were, in moving to elimination. So we see no new arms control treaties on the horizon. We don't see any willingness to engage in dialogue between especially Russia and the United States to try to bring those numbers down further. Instead, what we are seeing is a quite frightening program of modernization and talk about actually making these weapons more, quote, usable, unquote, which is somewhat problematic.
Well, Australia has long championed nuclear disarmament. Why are we opposing this treaty for the prohibition of nuclear weapons?
Australia always seems to struggle when trying to define a foreign policy, or especially a security policy, of its own. New Zealand can do this. They've been much better. They'll stand up for what they believe in. Australia has a, you know, on the one hand, we have had a pretty good record. We've been involved with banning chemical weapons. We've been closely involved in trying to get verification protocols put in place for the Biological Weapons Convention. We supported the Arms Trade Treaty. And at different times, some of our governments have been very supportive of the idea of moving to nuclear zero, especially when the Cold War ended. And the view was, we no longer need to live under this threat of Armageddon. The Canberra Commission report, which came out in 1996, is a key example of this. Now, that was under the Labor government. The coalition, on the other hand, is somewhat less willing to embrace this position. On the one hand, we do see DFAT and Julie Bishop, you know, talking at the UN about, yes, nuclear weapons are terrible and we must get rid of them. But on the other hand, they're saying, no, 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 not now. It's not the right time, or we can't upset our ally. And really, I think that will continue to be the policy that the coalition will adopt. I don't see much change in the coalition.
Well, this program's made in Western Australia, and we've regularly asked the Foreign Minister, Julie Bishop, to appear on our program and speak to us. She's been far too busy to speak to us, which might be understandable, but in fact, she seems to be far too busy to speak to anybody, to be interviewed by anybody about this incredibly important decision not to sign a treaty to ban nuclear weapons. Do you think that there is a credibility problem with governments not speaking with their population about the issue? I mean, that they've really just decided it for themselves?
Yes, and I think that there's a broader problem here, Adrian, about foreign policy making. You know, if we look at what Australia does when it decides to go to war, for example, right? John Howard took us into the war in Iraq without any sense that he needed to get some kind of public approval here. And he's able to do that. Similarly, the decisions are taken to back the United States, our ally, no matter what, and even in the face of substantial amount of public reservation about, you know, such a close alliance with the United States. I'm not arguing that we need to sever that alliance, but we can develop something that is more independent and more in our national interest, because it isn't always in our national interest to support the United States no matter what. And I think the Iraq War was a classic case of that. But Julie Bishop doesn't speak about these issues very much at a domestic level, and I think that is part of a broader problem that policies are being made and on the international stage, and we Australians haven't really heard anything about it. And that's not especially good.
Well, there has been an opinion piece by the Foreign Minister, I think, a while back in the Fairfax. And part of the justification that comes up is the idea that Australia enjoys an extended nuclear deterrence. Can you explain to us what this nuclear umbrella or extended nuclear deterrence is supposed to be and whether or not it's a real thing?
The idea of extended nuclear deterrence or a nuclear umbrella is that the United States promises to protect a country, its ally, by promising to use nuclear weapons to defend that country, should that country come under threat, under attack. Now, in some cases, this is a formal agreement. So Japan, for example, has a formal agreement. The United States provides what's loosely called a nuclear umbrella. There's no reason to believe that the United States would automatically reach for its nuclear weapons to defend an ally. It'll call on its conventional weapons. Nonetheless, this idea, if you like, of extended nuclear deterrence is something that, you know, remains present in our sort of collective psyches. In the case of Australia, it's very, very strange because politicians and the general public have convinced themselves that we are under a nuclear umbrella, US nuclear umbrella, via the ANZUS Treaty. The reality is that the ANZUS Treaty makes no mention whatsoever of the United States even coming to our aid using conventional weapons, never mind nuclear weapons. So nuclear weapons are not mentioned in the ANZUS Treaty. What the ANZUS Treaty does is it promises to consult. So if there's a common security problem or a threat, then as allies, we will sit down and, you know, the treaty doesn't say what we will do after that. And it certainly does not say that the United States will come to our aid using its nuclear weapons to defend us. This means, actually, that it's not legally problematic for us to sign the Nuclear Weapons Prohibition Treaty. We can do that and still retain the ANZUS Alliance. We can still maintain our existing relationship, cooperative relationship with the United States. But we would have to make an explicit statement saying we're not technically under a nuclear umbrella, but in any case, as Australia, we do not want to fall into a situation where there is a threat that nuclear weapons will be used to defend us. And that's because of the inhumane nature of nuclear weapons, the fact that nuclear weapons use violates international humanitarian law.
Is that because of their genocidal nature and that use would seem to be a crime against humanity?
Absolutely. There are a number of tenets of international humanitarian law that would be violated. The first is that these weapons cannot discriminate between combatants and civilians. So they are indiscriminate weapons. And we see that the nuclear weapon states target cities. They don't target just military installations. These are weapons that are based on a promise of attacking civilians, millions of civilians. That clearly is a violation. The other issue is that of proportionality. Using nuclear weapons would not be an appropriate response to many of the difficult security issues that we see at the moment. There's also the issue of serious injury and unnecessary suffering that would be caused to combatants and to civilians if a nuclear weapon was used. And we also need to keep in mind that the 15,000 or so nuclear weapons that we have in existence today, many of these are vastly bigger than the Hiroshima bomb and will be substantially more destructive.
You're listening to Understory, and this week we are considering the humanitarian and environmental impacts of nuclear weapons and the worldwide movement for nuclear reform embodied in the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, which Australia is yet to sign.
It's a different sort of treaty. It's sort of rewriting nuclear governance in a way.
The way that the global nuclear order has been set up, this has been done by the great powers through the 1970 Non-Proliferation Treaty. But the non-nuclear weapon states are extremely disillusioned with the NPT. This is not to say they're going to abandon the NPT, but they have realized that the global nuclear order has become entrenched, that there's no chance of changing it, that no matter how much they ask the nuclear weapon states to not just to move to elimination, but even to take some of the simple steps like taking nuclear weapons off high alert status or reducing the salience of nuclear weapons in their doctrines. But the nuclear weapon states have not done this. They've not budged. And so out of a deep sense of frustration, non-nuclear states have said, well, you know what, we're going to step outside the treaty, the NPT, and we're going for a simple and clear ban, a prohibition against nuclear weapons.
It also furnishes that treaty with a vision that's much wider than nuclear weapons themselves. It looks at issues of gender and indigenous people and the environment.
Yes, in that sense, it's a very modern treaty, and the preamble talks a lot, or it certainly makes a lot of reference to the fact that indigenous people have typically been the ones who have suffered most from the 2,000 or so nuclear tests that have been conducted, including in Australia, of course, that women and girls are affected to a greater extent than our males because of radiation, etc. It looks at the need to give a voice to civil society. So, you know, it talks about bringing together professional people, activists, NGOs, the Hibakusha, the survivors of the Japanese nuclear attacks. So it's while it is a treaty that is created by states, for states, there's very much an understanding of that broader implication and this broader groundswell of support for eliminating nuclear weapons. It talks about things like the need to protect the environment. It talks about the fact that international law is evolving and we now have some very clear rulings on the need to prevent ecocide, for example. It talks about intergenerational justice. So the fact that if we use nuclear weapons today, not only are we affecting the immediate victims, but we're likely to be affecting unborn generations And you know, these are deeply moral issues that have to be canvassed. The treaty does do that, I think, quite well.
Well, with this treaty unsigned, do you feel there's an obligation on citizens to contact their governments?
I think indeed, and if you simply Google humanitarian impacts of nuclear weapons, you will find many of these reports and studies that have emerged in the past decade, which actually show that things would be much, much worse than we even thought. Our luck has held so far for 70-odd years. There's no guarantee that it will hold forever. And as citizens, we, I think, should believe that we can affect change for the better.
Thanks to Dr. Marianne Hansen for speaking with Understory's Adrian Glamorgan in Canberra this week. And if you'd like to know more about this subject, start by Googling humanitarian impacts nuclear weapons. I'm Elizabeth Poe. We'll be back next week, same time, same planet, when there'll be more to explore with Understory.